As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Shakhtar Karagandy, Kolos Kovalivka, Torpedo Bel AZ Zodino, Pogon Szczecin, Spartak Trnava, Suduva, Vojvodina, Osijek. Tottenham fans, these are some of the teams that your team are likely to face in next season's Europa Conference League if Spurs stay where they are in the Premier League at the moment. It's obviously very different from the Champions League teams that Spurs used to play only 2 years ago. This is where Spurs' season is heading, unfortunately. My name's Jack Pitbrook. You're listening to the View from the Lane podcast. I'm joined, as always, by James Moore. How are you feeling about the prospect of Europa Conference League football next year, should it come to that?
I tell you what I'm baffled about, and that's that no one has been able to tell me what day of the week this thing is being played on.
Thursday.
So where is it? This is the same day as Europa League?
Yes.
I mean, this is the key question, genuinely the key question for the competition for me, what day of the week it's on. With all due respect to those teams, and I know very little about most of them, yeah, it doesn't exactly set pulses racing, does it?
Well, no, it's strange, isn't it? Because it's a mixture of teams who've done really well from smaller ranked countries and then teams who finished seventh in the top coefficient leagues. So I don't know what that will mean for motivation. You know, will that mean that the big coefficient teams will be much less motivated than the smaller league teams? Will it be a big chance for those teams to finally win a trophy? I'm not against the idea of it on those grounds. I think given that, you know, compared to say 10, 20, 30 years ago, we can see that even the Europa League, which is obviously the second bracket of competition, that is so dominated, completely monopolized now by English and Spanish teams in a way that is sort of true of the Champions League to a slightly different extent. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that teams like Red Star Belgrade or Steaua Bucharest would do really, really well, you know, Rangers would do really, really well in those European competitions, and now they've been completely blocked out by the hegemony of the English and Spanish leagues. So in that sense, I think it kind of makes sense to have a competition that is winnable for Spurs. Teams in the smaller countries. Yeah, well, hey, sorry, I'm not even doing a bit here bantering off Spurs, or I don't really know why I'm talking about like the moral case for the Europa Conference League on this podcast. It's not really why people are listening, but here we are. So I think it's like a good idea, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, when Spurs are flying off to Belarus or Montenegro or wherever every week next season. If it is Spurs, you know, they do still have 3 games to go, whether people will care. You know, do you think people will care, James? Will people go to the games?
I'd be surprised. I mean, there's been a real decrease in interest in the Europa League. I mean, obviously we didn't really get to see that this season because it was all behind closed doors by the one game, but yeah, I think had this been a normal season in terms of like fan attendance, I suspect some of those matches would have had incredibly low crowds, which would have been quite humiliating in that massive stadium. So yeah, people have kind of been spoiled by Champions League football for a few years, and I'd be very, very surprised if there was massive interest in this even once they got to the latter stages, if they did. I mean, it's a bit of a come down, isn't it, to go from playing, you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Juventus in the Champions League, getting to the Champions League final, to then playing in this kind of third level competition. Yeah, it's pretty damning, really, isn't it? But then, you know, as you say, I mean, it's a possibility they may not even get, they may not even achieve that. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
We should say that there is still all to play for. You know, Spurs have got 3 games left, and obviously Leicester away is quite hard. But I think Wolves at home, they should win. And sorry, my mind's gone completely blank. Villa. So I think that's two winnable games. So I think they'd probably get 6 points minimum for those 3 games. And they're only 1 point behind Liverpool and 2 points behind West Ham. So while I don't think Spurs are going to get 4th, I do think it's totally plausible they might get a 5th or 6th, even now. So I wouldn't completely give up on the prospects for European competition for next season, but it is very much out of their hands, isn't it? You know, Liverpool played a game less than them. Everton have played a game less than them. Maybe Spurs will have to go to the King Power Stadium on the last day of the season, try to get something. So yeah, it's all up in the air. Right now, we're offering our listeners 40% off the price of a subscription to The Athletic. You can read all of our articles on Spurs, including my recent piece on why Mauricio Pochettino remains the benchmark for Tottenham in their pursuit of a new coach. To read that and so much more, go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to take advantage of our special 40% discount and subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.99 a month.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's talk a bit about the game on Saturday lunchtime, James. Which I thought was, yeah, it was just typical Spurs. I mean, it was like they hadn't changed the manager, you know. There were some moments of great individual quality, didn't respond well to things going wrong, looked exhausted and in the second half. It was kind of bad how they were run off the pitch by a team who are 10th or 9th and have nothing to play for. They were so relentless in that second half, and they looked a lot more motivated in that second half than Spurs did.
I think it spoke of a couple of things that are kind of obvious, but I'm not really sure we necessarily mentioned. So, you know, I suppose we could be accused of enjoying the benefits of hindsight. But one, a team with a 29-year-old manager who has next to no coaching experience is just not going to be able to compete with, you know, we saw it with Guardiola the other week. And obviously he has an incredible squad, so that is slightly different. But, you know, someone like Bielsa, who's been a manager for over 30 years, his incredible experience, has kind of revolutionized the tactical side of the game. How can you expect Ryan Mason, you know, 29 years old, who's probably had, what, 10 training sessions maybe with this team, maybe 15 or something like that? I mean, there's no way you can expect him to be able to kind of compete on a tactical level. So you are basically, it is basically coming down entirely to the ability of the players, that, you know, classic Harry Redknapp. It's just about how good the players are. I can't remember exactly how he worded that, but you know that you're talking about. And also, you know, having mentioned he's only had 15 training sessions, you can't really expect things to change too drastically from where Spurs were 2 months or, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. I think they've got enough in the tank to beat inferior teams who either have bad tactics or no tactics, which thankfully for Spurs is actually probably quite a few teams in the Premier League, to be brutally honest. But Leeds obviously are a team with a lot of good players and an incredibly well-drilled system and an incredibly good manager who knows how to manage a game and change a game and make little tweaks that work in his team's favour. And when you're in a situation like that, I think Spurs are still going to struggle. So I think you saw it, you know, I think if we were being critical to the point of maybe almost being a bit unfair on Mason, you know, in the circumstances, and without wanting to be patronising, probably got the balance of that midfield wrong again. I mean, that was just a complete I mean, they got absolutely slaughtered in there, didn't they? Really, they just had Leeds just absolutely thrived in that area of the pitch. I mean, they were just running rings around them for the whole game, and it just allowed them to move the ball around so easily, create so many good chances. And, you know, I think if you had any one of Sissoko, Winks, or Ndombele in the team, and this isn't a criticism of Dele Alli, who I thought played really well, and I know we'll come on to that in a minute, but if you had one of those three in the team, I think it maybe would have been slightly different.
Yeah.
But again, you know, maybe that's easy to say, that it would have benefited hindsight. And the other thing is the way the substitutions, I think you saw. I mean, obviously, Leeds are in the unusual situation of having two of their better players on the bench in Phillips and Rafinha, obviously, because they've been injured, so yeah. He's able to throw them on later in the game, which, you know, it's not too often you have better players on the bench, but they did in this instance. And the changes Spurs made, I mean, I think you tweeted during the game, it was kind of like almost reverting more back to Mourinho's team.
Yeah.
I think it's quite weird on the commentary on BT, and I know people outside the UK won't have heard this, but Darren Fletcher and Steve McManaman were basically saying Dele Alli was barely in the game, which I thought was a bit unfair. Strange. I mean, you know, Dele Alli isn't Javi Hernandez or whatever. He's not going to make 120 passes in a game. He's a moments player, as we've said before. Yeah. You know, he was involved, you know, he had got an assist for the goal Spurs did score, and then I guess what you would call a pre-assist for the one that they had disallowed. You know, there were a few flicks and tricks and moments and some good passes and some good movement. You know, I thought he actually played pretty well. Bale wasn't in the game.
Yeah, Bale was not very good at all.
And to be honest, Kane, I thought, you know, wrongly disallowed goal aside, wasn't especially involved either. But yeah, the changes that Spurs made, I don't think really solved any of the problems they had or added anything that they had been lacking. And there probably weren't too many people that thought Ryan Mason would end up being a Tottenham manager after these last sort of half a dozen games or so. But I would say what you saw on Saturday was probably an indication of why.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the non-selection of Ndombele, as with the Man City game at Wembley, didn't really make sense. I just think if you're playing against a team that's going to swarm you in midfield, you need someone who can keep hold of the ball.
Yeah.
And we saw that against City. We saw that against Leeds.
It was just based on him having a bad game against Southampton, right? He was really bad in that Southampton game, Ndombele. And yeah. You know, fatigue will be a factor in that as well, and that might be one of the reasons he's not playing now. But I don't know. I that feels incredibly rash to leave out one of your better players on the basis of one bad performance. Yeah, you know, as you say, I mean, I think that was quite a big tactical oversight in that game in particular.
Yeah, Dele was good. The little flick pass through for Son's goal, the pass for the Kane disallowed goal.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're meant to get with Dele. It's moment, little flicks, moments of magic and improvisation in the final third. So from him, it was really good to see him playing that well again. It's probably his best. I think Dan Kilpatrick tweeted that was his best performance in the Premier League all season. I think it probably was, which is sad, really, because I think it's only his fourth or fifth Premier League start of the season.
Yeah, fourth, I think.
Because he's had such a strange year, completely rejected and ignored by Mourinho. But there it is. I just want to say one quick thing. I know we've said this for years. I thought the VAR disallowing the Kane goal was ridiculous. It just wasn't offside. It was level. Level is onside.
There's no way you can like look at that and say he was offside. As you say, it's level. I mean, yeah. It's really arbitrary, the whole thing. Like, I mean, I know a few people have tweeted this over the weekend. But they take a still image where you can't actually see Son because there are two defenders kind of standing between him and the camera. So you can't actually see the exact second he kicks the ball. And even if it is right, they draw the line in an arbitrary place as well, where it looks like the line on the Leeds defender could maybe be in a slightly different place in relation to the end of his foot, to the one they've drawn on the end of Kane's foot. And then you kind of look at it and the lines are kind of level and they shift the lines around and then they try and kind of say, oh, is Kane's shoulder offside? And they move the second line around and it's just like, and I tweeted this, and I stand by this. If the linesman hadn't put his flag up and hadn't thought it was offside, if his initial instinct was that it was onside and he hadn't put his flag up and they played on and then they looked, I think that goal stands. And
I agree, yeah.
You know, there is no, as far as I'm aware, and I could be wrong on this and I could be embarrassing myself here, but I don't think the clear and obvious error thing applies to offside. I think that's just some more subjective things, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think you're right.
You're offside or you're not, basically. And they use their quote-unquote technology. They use their quote-unquote science to prove or disprove.
So-called technology.
So-called experts.
So-called VAR.
Yeah, God. The key thing to remember is not to be annoyed with the technology, it's to be annoyed with the people. User error.
Well, maybe the game would have been different if Kane's goal had stood and Tottenham had gone 2-1 up, but of course they didn't. And I don't think Spurs reacted very well to that in the second half, which is something we've seen a little bit from Spurs over the last few years. And that's why they're left in this kind of unenviable league position now with the fate of their European qualifications for next season left out of their hands.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, of course, the big concern for lot, or big issue for lots of Spurs fans now, and beyond the last three games of this season, is who's going to be the new head coach for next season. This is something which we wrote about a fair bit in what I wrote about last week. Basically, Spurs are still taking their time over the whole process. There's not going to be an announcement anytime soon. I certainly not expecting anything before the Leicester game, which is the last game of the season. I think it might roll on longer than that. Steve Hitchin is currently drawing up a sort of 3-4 maximum 5-man shortlist, and then they'll move on to interviews. They will interview face-to-face if they can, but COVID travel restrictions mean that some of that might have to be on Zoom. I would expect the announcement probably in late May, maybe early June. James, are you okay with that time scale? Would you rather know sooner? Or
I mean, I'm not especially fussed about knowing before the end of the season. I don't think there's massive benefit to that, really, from a personal perspective. You know, and I'm old enough to remember 2003, 2004, when Levy sat the manager Glenn Hoddle in September and then had a caretaker for the entire season. And obviously we saw more recently Tim Sherwood in the second half of 13-14 be caretaker for the second half of the season. So, yeah, I don't think the time frame is too drawn out from that perspective. I mean, clearly what is important is having a new man in place, like a decent period of time before the start of pre-season, which I guess will be what, like kind of second week of July or whatever. So yeah, by like the middle of June, I suppose you really want that person to be there. I mean, I know the Euros is a possible complication. If there's anyone there that they may want to talk to or may want to offer the job. But yeah, I mean, I think I would worry about that a little bit if that then took us into like the second week of July and then suddenly you've got like someone who's been through all the kind of rigors of European Championships then coming back into club football. And I'm not talking about specifically Martinez, although he's the obvious one.
Yeah.
Quite how that works in terms of getting his feet under the table at Tottenham, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
It is frustrating, and I know a lot of fans will be thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, Nagelsmann's gone. A few other candidates, they kind of wavered on it. Although, you know, from what we understand, no one's been offered a job, and I know you wrote that last week. But clearly it's quite a frustrating time for the fans. They want to know what's going on. But I actually think it actually probably is in everyone's best interest for them to not rush into a decision.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think the word coming from the club is very much that they want to make sure they get it right and don't jump into it. And there's no point in rushing it now and getting it wrong. Oh, I guess one good bit of news is that I know some people have speculated that there wouldn't be any money for the new candidate. Well, I mean, we've heard that I don't think money is going to be a big problem. It's not like Spurs are only looking at people who are currently out of work. And I think that partially explains the timetable, you know, in the sense that if they were looking at people who were, if they were only looking at candidates who are out of work, then they could do all they're looking now. But obviously because they would be looking at candidates who are in work, that's why an announcement is probably likelier after the end of the season, because they would want to be interviewing people who are currently coaching other teams. Also, you know, I think probably connected to that, Mourinho getting that Roma job is obviously beneficial to Spurs financially, in the sense that Daniel Levy doesn't have to keep paying him his full salary once he starts managing Roma in July.
Charging £60 a ticket for that Aston Villa game as well, that would be good for him. He'll get like £600,000 out of that, so that'd be nice.
Yeah, well, it's worth saying, you know, it's that is an approach that's obviously upset a lot of Spurs fans. And Another story to keep an eye on, which I think we'll try and cover in more detail next time, is concerns THST, who have called for independent mediation with the club after basically the breakdown of relations between the THST and the Tottenham Hotspur board, who traditionally would have scheduled meetings. But obviously the events of the Super League last month have really undermined that relationship. So I think that's a really interesting, important topic, and one that we will be coming back to soon. In terms of the manager search, James, what did you make of Brighton the other day?
I watched two of the supposed candidates, I guess, really, Nuno and Potter, go head to head on BBC One on Sunday lunchtime. I wouldn't say that I was. Actually, that's a bit unfair. Brighton were very good in the first half. They played some good football and created some good chances. Scored a decent goal from a set piece, and you thought, maybe there's something there. And then, and I know there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast who are incredibly pro Potter. They're fully Potter in, which is fair enough. But then they went down to 10 men, Dunk got sent off, and they just completely lost it in the second half. They basically, we're used to seeing this. They sat in for the entire second half, at Molineux as well. Really kind of invited that pressure. And again, it's slightly different circumstances because they had 10 men on the pitch. And then conceded two goals. Well, one, I guess, kind of early in the second half, really, and the second in injury time. And lost the game. So, Neil Maupai just completely lost his mind at full time as well, in kind of, that kind of Poch style, really, that, isn't it? That might be something that appeals to people, actually, the idea that the players completely lose their shit when things don't go their way, as per PSG last week and Spurs in 2016. So, yeah, I'd be lying if I said I was massively impressed by that. Obviously, having said Spurs are going to take their time to make the decision, I don't imagine they're going to make it on the basis of 45 minutes of football, thankfully. But, that wasn't something that left me especially convinced, particularly given Wolves haven't been great in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been interesting how I've heard from more and more fans saying that Potter is the guy that they want. Alistair Gold did a good story for football.london the other day saying that some of the players want Potter in. My own take is I think Potter is a hugely impressive candidate. I think his coaching record is really good. In terms of his likelihood of getting the job, I think he's very attractive to Spurs in some ways. Ultimately, I wonder whether this might be coming slightly too early for him. He hasn't got that much Premier League top flight experience, that much experience working with top players. So I don't know. I wouldn't make him favourite, but I can totally see the attraction. If you had any other thoughts, James, on who you think it might be or who you might want, Potter aside.
No, I haven't moved on from my comedy picks from last week. So we'll have Vertonghen and Dembélé, joint managers. That'll do.
Vincent Janssen and Clinton and Gene.
yeah, Vincent Janssen could be fitness coach.
I think my own view on this is that I think even some candidates who people have said are out of the running are probably not out of the running. So I alluded to this in the article that we ran last week. I don't think Erik ten Hag is necessarily out of the running. I know he signed that new contract at Ajax, but I think if Spurs really wanted him, I think they could get him. Equally, Brendan Rodgers, I know Rodgers has made it known that he wants to stay at Leicester. Well, I'm not doubting that he does want to stay at Leicester, but I don't think it's impossible that he would end up at Tottenham either.
I mean, how do you think Leicester, their potential collapse now? They've lost to Newcastle on Friday night and suddenly they're massively looking over their shoulders. And they've got two very difficult games and a game against Spurs to come. They could lose their Champions League place, and then how does that change that situation? Do Spurs, are they put off Rodgers because for the second season in a row Leicester have fallen away? Does that change his mindset? Does that mean he's more likely to want the job? It would put me off, I think. I'd worry about that. And, given the whole thing with Liverpool in 2014 is slightly overstated because, that basically their form in the second half of the season was really good and then they dropped points in two games, basically. But it was still something of a late collapse. And that does make you, worry, a combination of a manager susceptible to late collapses and Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. I don't know, that may be not like the best combination.
Yeah, I'm a huge Brendan fan. I think he's amazing, but I don't think it's 100% impossible that he takes the Tottenham job. Tottenham could finish ahead of Leicester.
They could, and obviously Leicester finishing like fifth two seasons in a row is like a really good achievement. That's a very good,
massively.
Like, he's done a very good job there. Whatever happens between now and the end, but. It, nonetheless, I think that was something that would be on the minds of Levy and Hitchin, I'd say.
I still think, if I had to guess, I think the likeliest candidates are probably Martinez, Ten Hag, Rodgers, Potter. I think Parker would probably fall into the same bracket as Potter, which is very popular and highly rated young manager who will go on to be very, very good, but maybe this Tottenham job right now is a bit too early in his development.
I mean, is it telling that the other job that Scott Parker is being linked with is Bournemouth?
I hadn't even seen that, but that does make sense. But yeah, I have really enjoyed hearing the thoughts of Spurs fans on Twitter, and you know, less positive on Martinez than I might have thought, more positive on Potter than I might have thought. So yeah, if you've got any other thoughts, guys, on who you might want or who you don't want, then let us know. I think that we're probably going to wrap up this week's podcast there, but we'll be back again next week where we'll be looking back on the Wolves game, which hopefully Spurs will win, and also looking forward to the full return of fans in the middle of the following week.
We might have some protest chat as well, because there's supposed to be the protest, isn't there, at the weekend?
Yeah, there will certainly be something at those games.
You'll be on the front line.
Yeah, quite possibly. So, guys, thanks a lot for everyone. Thanks for the questions, as always. Sorry for the questions we don't get around to, but we do read all of them. We do really appreciate you sending them in. And we'll be back again next week.
The Athletic.